are the light of the world, let your light shine before all men, that they may see your deeds and glorify our Father in heaven. The lamp is the mitzvah. The light it shines is the Torah. The lamp is the mitzvah. The light it shines is the Torah. The lamp is the mitzvah.
What about evangelism? A messianic perspective on sharing the gospel. Lecture 1. Uncircumcised lips. The sages point out that Exodus 6:12 is one of the 10 instances that the Torah employs the method of kal vachomer, from the light to the heavy. Moses said to the Lord, "Behold, the people of Israel have not listened to me. How then shall Pharaoh listen to me? For I am a man of uncircumcised lips." His argument is kal vachomer because he reasons thusly, "If my own people will not listen to me, how much less will Pharaoh listen to me?" Moses explains that he is of uncircumcised lips, a term similar to other biblical idioms like uncircumcised hearts and so on. Some have suggested that perhaps this meant Moses had a speech impediment. I think he simply did not regard himself as an adequate communicator. In today's world, when it comes to evangelism, especially from a messianic perspective, I believe we find ourselves in a similar position as Moses. As followers of the Master, we all have the commandment to go and make disciples of all nations. We have been entrusted with the message of the proclamation of the good news, the message of the gospel. We are to be Messiah's witnesses. Now, let me just say up front that I'm probably not the best person to be teaching about evangelism. I certainly don't think of myself as an evangelist or someone with the gift of persuasion. As a teenager, I did lead one of my best friends to the Lord, and he became a devout Christian for several years, but today he's one of the world's most famous atheists, so I'm not sure I can claim any credit there. Anyway, I grew up in an evangelical church with some definite ideas about witnessing, about saving souls, and how it was done. In that worldview, there were only two types of people in the world, the lost and the saved. The lost were heading for hell, the saved were heading for heaven. It was the job of the saved to reach the lost and rescue them. If you didn't save people from hell, ultimately, you were responsible. Their guilt was upon your head. In this worldview, once you were saved, for all practical purposes, you were done, finished, a completed human being. And the only real worthy purpose that remained in life for you after salvation was to go out and save more souls. Keenly aware of this, as a kid, I would sometimes empty the church's supply of witnessing tracts and deliver them door to door in my small hometown. I remember my pastor scolding me saying, "Hey, kid, don't take all the tracts." And I was concerned for my friends. I witnessed to them by warning them about the torments of hell. Picture 2 10-year-old boys talking together. "What's the worst, most painful thing you can imagine?" I ask. And he says to me, "Oh, slivers under my fingernails." So I tell him, "Well, that's exactly what hell is going to be like." As a teenager, I saw church outreach at its worst. And frankly, it was embarrassing to me. I wanted no part in it. It was obnoxious. Canvassing a mall, cornering people, pushing them to pray a certain prayer, pressuring the sale. It was an unholy union of commercialism and religion, a fast food type packaging of Christianity by which we had reduced truth to a trite formula, which we then attempted to force upon the unwary passerby. And what is it that we are selling anyway when we do evangelism? You go out and you sell a theological construct. Make sure that your customer is inculcated with the correct knowledge, the right formulation. Make sure he confesses or she confesses Jesus as Savior, and it's mission accomplished, right? I'm afraid that when we do this kind of evangelism, we reduce our witness for the Messiah to the level of telemarketer, calling to sell you some product that you probably don't want. Have you tried our new improved Soul Saver, 30% more effective at saving your soul from hell than previous religious affiliations, available for a limited time at the low, low price of your verbal consent? You're trying to be polite with the telemarketer, but he won't let you off of the call. You keep trying to tell him to let you go, but he won't let the call end. He always has another question or pressure point, and he keeps pressing, and all you want is for the conversation to end so that you can hang up the phone, turn on the answering machine, and never answer the telephone again. We have answers for questions nobody is asking, and when we are answering questions that no one is asking, that makes us irrelevant. I'm not saying that these types of aggressive evangelism never work. And I know that many people have entered the kingdom through tract ministries and aggressive street evangelism and so forth. But it also bears bad fruit, actually repelling people from the gospel. The truth is, when it comes to evangelism, I tend to shrink back. I don't want to be hassled by anyone, and I don't want to hassle anyone. In the postmodern world in which we live, absolute truth has fallen from fashion, and it's been replaced with the broad spectrum of cultural, religious, and spiritual diversity, and nobody wants to hear about your one true religion anymore. So I feel like Moses at the burning bush. Here am I, send someone else. Given this uncomfortable history I have with evangelism, I found it refreshing to experience within the Torah observant messianic movement a completely different posture toward evangelism, something called lifestyle evangelism. If you haven't heard of this, let me give you the rundown. The idea of lifestyle evangelism is that we simply live out our convictions and we are thereby a light to the people around us and they're attracted to us. The concept is explained in Torah Club Volume 1. Deuteronomy 4:6 says, "Keep the statutes and the rules the Lord commanded and do them, for that will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who when they hear all these statutes will say, 'Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.' For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us, whenever we call upon him? And what great nation is there that has statutes and rules so righteous as all this Torah that I set before you today?" Torah Club Volume 1 explains that the people of God are supposed to be different from other people. Through the commandments of the Torah, God asks us to eat differently, dress differently, worship differently, and behave differently than the rest of the world. Through the commandments, God holds his people to high levels of integrity, justice, and ethical concern for others. The Torah keeper, therefore, cannot help but stick out from the people around him. The Torah says that when we keep God's commandments, unbelievers will see the difference in our lives. The simple wisdom of the Torah observant life is attractive to the outside world. Even secular people who do not believe in God are drawn to people of faith who live out their convictions. And it does work on some levels.